Hot 1027 Business with Michael Avery.
Well, as Eskom is warning the country to brace for yet more load shedding potentially this week, saying that the power system is severely tight, so the president dedicated his weekly letter this morning to the ongoing power crisis. It wasn't a surprise, but there are several questions in a piece that is titled "There is Light at the End of the Load Shedding Tunnel." Peter Attard-Montalto, head of capital markets research at Intellidex, is back in London after being in Joburg for a week last week. Peter, welcome. There might be light, but the million-dollar question is how many years away? Because right now it feels like light years away. Firstly, what did you make of the president's letter this morning?
Well, I think it was a regurgitation of what we largely already know. And it's all very positive. I mean, these changes such as the Electricity Regulation Act are fine. But I think the tone falls into the trap of thinking that existing, particularly procurement issues, are on track, which they definitely are not. And so I think the real problem we have here is this sort of expectation that maybe just about people were okay with last year, that say there's another year left or so of load shedding. Actually, we're now talking about a longer period of probably well into 2024 before we see an end to load shedding, and I don't think that's fully appreciated by Pretoria, that the procurement issues now just are not moving fast enough to ensure a much more rapid solution here.
That is the problem, because you've got the president listing everything that's going on in the background, bed windows 5 and 6, Eskom unbundling, that 100 megawatt self-generation cap. It all sounds good on the surface, but you wrote in Business Day Today that it does mask some serious market and procurement failure that's going on under the surface. Can you just elaborate on what sort of market and procurement failure you see happening at the moment?
So the risk mitigation round was the 2 gigawatt round that was meant to originally have energy on grid by the end of 2021. That hasn't even reached financial close yet. And while we thought initially maybe a dumping of Carr Powership would mean that financial close of other projects, about 800 megawatts, was possible at the end of March, it's now being extended as Dia Maria attempt to resuscitate the Carr Powership deal from the dead. This has just been stretched on and on. It's unlikely, I think, that this process will reach a successful conclusion. We may get one or two projects eventually coming on grid, but really we're delaying this again and again, and that's not really probably going to arrive in any meaningful way until through the end of next year. Bid window 6 was launched before bid window 5 has even reached financial close, which I think is getting the backs of many projects up, particularly as it doesn't fully address many of the problems that we're now seeing in bid window 5. Bid window 5 is proving deeply problematic with the lack of local content available onshore, with the sharp rises in prices for capital goods being imported as well. Means that a sizable minority of those projects are not able to probably reach financial close at the end of this month. And we'll probably see an extension announced through to, say, October or so, which means, again, we're pushing out when energy is on grid from, say, the second half of next year, well then into 2024. And I think the problem here is there's a view from on high of, you know, we're doing policy, we've launched a bid window, we've signed a bit of paper on 100 megawatts, et cetera, it's all fine. But as we're seeing on the 100 megawatt issue, you know, the piece of paper was just the beginning. Really, it's the much wider regulatory and process complications that are holding that kind of thing back. And I think we need to be thinking about the credibility or the probability that policy actually leads to outcomes, as opposed to just focusing on tick-boxing the policy.
And I mean, you mentioned in the column, James Formby coming out last week to say that we should look at scrapping localization targets for now, not saying that localization isn't a good long-term strategy, but for now, while we need to really be focusing on getting every single megawatt that we can onto the grid. And I have the sense that we often do this, Peter. We put the kind of broader policy cart before the, you know, the reality horse in South Africa, in that the most fundamental thing for the South African economy right now is just to ensure that we can get megawatts onto the grid, that we can achieve some level of energy stability and security and start growing the economy. And then we can start thinking about grand long-run policy objectives like localization and industrialization and the rest of it. I mean, how do you see that playing out?
So this is a classic example. There simply just is not the local content available. We saw obviously a massive shutting down of capacity after the REAP rounds pause from 2014. The lack of corporate buying market as well through that period meant there was simply no demand onshore. The delays now that we're seeing that we just talked about is also adding uncertainty for manufacturers. And so it's just not an interesting market at the moment for people to set up and to provide that local content. Now, in the long term, South Africa has huge potential for local content from demand. We're going to see a need another sort of 80 gigawatts of renewables coming on stream. That's ginormous. We're going to need, 40 gigawatts for hydrogen alone, for instance. So on top of that, that is. So there are just huge demand pipelines in the future, and we should have our eyes on that end goal. The end goal is to have decent, well-priced and good quality local content out there through the just energy transition in the medium run. But to insist on it right now when it's simply unavailable and cannot be provided simply blows up the larger aim here. The whole point in and the primary point of energy procurement is to get energy. It is not all the rest of it. And I think it's just chasing one's tail. And hence, we need to have a rethink. And that's now the worry with Bid Window 6 being launched so quickly. It has the same local content requirements in it, which probably cannot be met.
And I mean, if you look at it, and there's a broader discussion here, even within the renewable sector around pricing, because if you look at the current EPC pricing that Bid Window 5 projects are showing, single figure equity returns are becoming the standard. And surely that isn't sustainable on the one hand. We've also got the inflation that you mentioned of imported capital goods that was even showing some increase before the Russia-Ukraine crisis. Again, that feeds into the financial close problems in Bid Window 5 that you're speaking of. Do you think there's a broader conversation that needs to be happened here around reforming the auction process or the REAP mechanism? And I know the REAP mechanism has been hugely successful. We've brought in over 200 billion rands worth of private sector investment into the energy sector. Is it time to open up a conversation around refining the auction process and maybe introducing some alternative process?
So there are some things about the auction process in and of itself which do need change, particularly if you said on local content, some of the requirements as well that have complicated things on how community trusts, for instance, are set up could be improved going forwards. But the main thing around the rounds is to have them regularized, have them running every 3 to 4 months to provide a degree of certainty and to work with the legal sector in particular to ensure some degree of standardization. There's still huge costs of being a project from the amount of legal advice that's required around these. There is actually a good reform that's come in Bid Window 6, which is to reduce the number of projects that an individual BEE partner can work on. That's to prevent what happened in Bid Window 5, where one took, I think it was 90%, over 90% of the projects. But we need more thought process, I think, and to be rolled out. And the IPA office is very risk averse about this. But there are this is all medium run stuff for getting energy on grid in sort of 2 years' time. In the short term, we need much more radical, different procurement processes, particularly like feed-in tariffs, which are legally complicated under the PFMA, but potentially could be possible with Treasury's involvement. And that would allow potentially energy to get on grid much, much faster. But overall, I mean, I think the problem here is, given these delays, etc., given the baking in of these problems that we're seeing at the moment, we are going to have to ride out a longer period of load shedding. This is largely unavoidable, certainly for the next 18 months or so.
Yeah, not what business would like to hear. Just one last point there from you, Peter. Looking at what the president wrote in his letter today, he did endorse the work that the board of Eskom are doing and seemed to give his full support to André de Ruyter and the rest of the team. There's a lot of pressure. And the reason I mention that is there seems to be a lot of pressure in the general public and certain RET-aligned factions to remove this board. And I think it's pretty clear why, when you've got a board pursuing the likes of Malefi and Coco et al. For, what, 3.6 billion rands in a civil claim. What do you make of the work that the Eskom board is doing?
So I think there's been quite a misunderstanding of what the board actually gets up to. Their main purpose is to provide oversight for what the management and what Andre are getting up to. And I think they are doing that very effectively. I think it's quite clear from seeing their interactions with Scopa last week that they were going through each recommendation that Scopa had provided with them in 2019 with a great degree of seriousness and explaining in a huge amount of detail what they were up to. But I think there is ultimately, I think as you lay out, a problem of eating a scapegoat in the system. I think the intervention just after she was appointed last week of Kabai, the new head of the ANC Economic Transformation Committee on Eskom was somewhat dramatic. I think shows the populist pressure on Eskom. But fundamentally, I think and having studied very closely what Eskom is up to at the moment, I think that the current board and Andre are doing all they possibly can to correct load shedding, but the historic hangover is simply far too great, and so one is simply running to try and move backwards slightly less fast. Maybe the convoluted way of putting it. I don't think we can get EAF of Eskom plants up to the 75-odd% in the Eskom roadmap. But at the very least, we can do is just to slow the pace of decline from here.
Yeah, the plant is just too old, but it was interesting to see the president at least admit to state capture and at its heart, really, the ANC-led government's complicit role in the decline of Eskom over the last 10 years, which is exactly what Eskom board member Busi Mavuso was saying to Scopa last week. He stopped short of mentioning Chancellor House by name, though. Peter Attard-Montalto, head of capital markets research at IntelliDex, with the latest on load shedding here on Hot Business. Well, that's a wrap from me. Remember, you can stream the best old school on R&B in the country with Simon right here on hot1027.co.za, and the always affable Carolyn Stain is up next on Hot Classics. Good night.